Welcome to Juno Afternoon. It's Friday, March 10th. I'm Andy Klein, and coming up on today's show, the Innovation Summit's coming up next week. We'll hear all about this annual event and its special purpose this year. Then music, and music is happening for the rest of the show then. First, Underground Connection and DJ Cora the Kid's going to be here. We'll hear the music and we'll talk to the artist and also the organizer of Underground Connection. And then classical music with the Juno Piano Series. Lots of discussion and listening to great music today, covering the whole scope. It's going to be a really fun afternoon. It's all ahead on Juno Afternoon. Hope you'll join us.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha ani kak gunishish.
This is Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm Andy Klein, and joining me now is Brian Holst, the Juno Economic Development Council. And Brian, every year, the Juno Economic Development Council has put on the Innovation Summit. Is this the 11th year? Is that right? Or
I think it's even more than that.
Is it?
12th or 13th.
12, okay, all right.
I know that number.
Come on, man. You got to come in. come in swinging on here on that number.
I was ready for all sorts of questions, but how many have we done?
Well, it's coming up March 15th and 16th. It's at the University of Alaska Southeast. I think is it also Zoom capabilities as well? It's all in person.
All in person.
All in person this year. So back to networking, face-to-face, in person, and which is such a huge value of it as well. But pretty interesting. This year, the theme, you have a theme every year, and this year it is purpose. Tell me about that theme. That's a really interesting approach.
And I know it's been more than 10 years because 10 years ago, our theme was shared value. And shared value and purpose are really related concepts. And what we are, when we're talking about shared value or we're talking about purpose, we are talking about a business concept. And what purpose is a way for your business to achieve to simultaneously help solve a societal problem and create financial value for the company. And what we're finding is that companies that incorporate purpose into their strategy, this is not like a bolt-on extra thing you do. This is something that you work into your strategy, will end up attracting talent that is more interested in delivering goods, something, a benefit to society. You'll have a bigger impact on your own community. Your customers will find it more appealing, and the financial results tend to be more positive.
So when you're saying the word purpose, you're really not saying, okay, a business needs to know what they're in the business of doing. We make widgets, we do this, we run a car wash, whatever it is. They need to, or not need to, but there's something to think about if you're going to be an innovative business and you're going to work in this space of being innovative and all the positive feedback that comes from being innovative, right. you need to think about what's a broader purpose for why you're doing what you're doing, or right, how right. can you work into a broader purpose.
So let's think. So say you're in the mariculture industry. You know, is your purpose simply
selling oysters?
Oysters, right? It could, be what your business is about. But a business that will be successful would have a purpose in selling healthy oysters, selling oysters that are healthy lifestyle, for example,
sustainable, right? Things like that.
To incorporate into your business those elements that are beyond just making a buck. But the reason you want to come to the Innovation Summit is because those folks that have really come to understand how to do this are going to be here. We think of large companies like Nestle Corporation. And I mentioned Nestle because I think there's a time if people sort of follow the business world, they weren't viewed as the greatest company. A big company, sort of a lot of products. But overseas, there were some moments when, some of their products, some of their baby products might have been too much sugar in it, maybe not the highest quality product.
And there was some baby formula stuff that I remember some Nestle. Yeah, right.
Yeah, there was a moment there where sort of the profit motive might have got ahead of really what they were about. And they're an example of a company that has re-examined who they are and how they operate, and have learned to really focus on, nourishing young people. And then it becomes a product with that has a greater appeal. It has a how they go about serving communities changes, how they go about what the end result is. It may be a slightly more expensive product to make it a high quality, but because people understand and trust what it's doing, their market share grows and they do better.
Mm, yeah. Interesting. And you mentioned the types of people that come as well. So that's another piece of this is for someone who's got a construction business or someone who's, busy, they're working, they're busy. What's the motivation for people who are in the midst of running businesses and in the midst of running organizations to take a break for a day or two and have this discussion?
Yeah, that's a great question. Just a couple of days ago, a successful business person said to me, Brian, purpose, really, are we, do we have time to think about purpose? Is this, it is hard enough to run a business in Alaska to try to add on a piece. And that's what we really want to explore in the summit is that this is when you change your strategy to be more focused on the outcomes and the impacts to your broader community, to your workers, to your society, to your customers, you'll have a deeper, more successful financial outcome. So this is a business concept that has an evolution. We don't want to say this is a new concept because a lot of groups have been out there. A couple of the examples that we're bringing, we invited down Siri Corporation. I think most of us here in Juneau know Sea Alaska very well. And we've seen how Sea Alaska is very purposeful in how they operate. And they've changed. They used to be famously invested in far-flung places, making profits as well. But I think there was a moment where they reflected on, well, really, what are we trying to do? What is the purpose of our organization? And then you see them now making investments here in our region, here in sustainable seafoods, for example, in tourism that is regenerative and positive in our community. So Sea Alaska has been a great example. We invited Siri to come, their native corporation in the Anchorage area, because they also are very deliberate about putting purpose within their strategy. And it's Sarah Lucan's going to come. She's their chief strategy officer at Siri, and come and listen to what she has to say. But a part of what she's going to talk about is it's one thing as a native corporation or any large corporation to have purpose at one scale, but they acquire subsidiaries often, and they have experience where the company will be asked to reexamine sort of how they're operating, why they're operating. a subsidiary. She's going to tell us a story about that and how they initially really pushed back. Said, you know, you're going to change our business model. You bought us and we were successful, and now you're asking us to think differently about how we operate. And then, you know, fast forward, the experience was that that business is now more successful than they've ever been because they've changed the way they do business. Mm. And so those are the stories that we want to bring to business leaders in our region that are interested in and what we all are interested in, right? We love this part of the world. We want to make a buck because we have to, right? We got to survive. But we want to do it in a way, can we do it in a way also that is has added benefit for society?
Yeah.
And what we're learning is that not only does this approach better for society, your customers, your employees, but you make more money when you do it well.
Yeah. Tell me about how the different days are kind of split up. What's going to be happening on these two different days?
So the Innovation Summit.
15th and 16th again at the University of Alaska Southeast.
We really want folks to come out. We put this together. We work hard on bringing really thought leaders to our humble, small town of Juneau, Alaska. We leave the best thinking we can here to Alaska. So there's a couple elements that we've learned over the years that have really been popular. We have this element called Innovation Shorts. Those are presentations from attendees. So if you're an attendee, when you register, you also offer to give a presentation, short 10-minute presentation. So we have an opportunity for folks to hear short presentations about innovations that people are doing in their own businesses. Another element of the event is the pitch contest. The pitch contest is the Alaska Airlines pitch contest with hosted with the Juneau Chamber of Commerce.
Always a fun event.
Yeah.
Yeah, always really fun because, you know, that's all about people with new ideas, you know, that energy of having a new business, a new idea, a new concept happening, sort of sussing it out on stage and making the pitch. It's really exciting to see that. It's sort of the kind of pitch that you would imagine, you know, if you were a loan officer, a corporate loan officer or something, you'd see these sort of pitches every now and then. It'd be pretty interesting to hear how people are kind of framing a business or have a new idea. But you get to be in on that kind of a meeting.
Right. And it's inspirational. We do it so that these businesses get exposure to they get some feedback afterwards from the audience, but also from expert judges. But it's also an opportunity to inspire others because there are lots of folks out there that have ideas that they'd like to, they think could become a great business, but need some encouragement to go ahead and put themselves out there. And we've seen, you know, there are lots of great examples here in Juneau of people who have done that. In fact, we're going to get a couple updates during the pitch contest from some companies that have pitched before, like Ramper Innovations. I don't know if you're familiar with that business, but they have this, they're based in Sitka, and they have this incredible product where they help load baggage onto aircraft. And it's right here in Sitka, Alaska, and they're actually making sales. It's a startup. It's been a long journey, but we're going to hear from the owner of Ramper Innovations about how that experience has gone. We'll also hear from Titlevision. Titlevision is a company.
I was going to mention Zach and the guys at Titlevision. It's amazing. That's such an incredible story.
Right. And it's going to be fun to hear, the evolution of that company that started right here in Juneau. They've got some investors. I know they kind of pulled a lot of their operations out of Juneau because of the pull of the investors as well. But, you know, they're Juneauites, Alaskans, and they're doing well. And so it's fun to hear a little bit of their story on where they are and how they got there. You know, you asked about the Innovation Summit and sort of general, we try to keep it as compact as possible. You know, this is really directed towards the business community, a great opportunity here in Juneau to kind of get world-class thinking. We start on Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock. We'll go into the evening and then we go all day on Thursday. So just a day and a half of your time. We do have optional stuff in the morning on Wednesday, take some tours, and we do have activities in the evenings, the pitch contest on Wednesday night, and we have the there is always a good celebration at the end as well, which people really enjoy.
Tell me about this concept of deep dives on certain subjects.
Yeah, so we have main stage speakers, and then we have the opportunity to bring people together to talk about this and apply what you're hearing to how does this really work for my business? So it's not just, we just don't leave it out there as a, oh, that was an interesting concept,
right.
But we kind of push it on folks, and it's very, it's really up to the participant to how much they want to be and do it. But we make it available when we invite a speaker to come. We don't let them, just fly in, give the presentation and fly out. And they're always a little bit surprised. I'm like, no, you have to stay the whole time. But when is my presentation? No, but you have to stay the whole time. Because we want to, we really want you to engage with our audience. So we have a few keynotes. You know, we have Nikhil from FSG who is talking about he's going to introduce the concept of the purpose playbook. He's going to take shared value that we talked about 10 years ago and show how it's evolved into the purpose playbook. We have Sarah Lucan, I mentioned about Siri and their example. And then we have Stephen Trimble, who is a non-native corporation in Anchorage who has incorporated purpose successfully into their business, Arctic Solar Adventures. But we also have we've decided to because of the relevance of carbon capture, utilization, and storage, the governor has highlighted some opportunities that he sees for Alaska. We know that there are some corporations. See Alaska, very famously has already taken advantage of some of the carbon markets. So we brought in, we have two people that are going to be talking to us about that opportunity. One really from a technical side to help us to understand really what are they talking about and mm-hmm. as well as you can in 25, 30 minutes.
Yep, yep.
And then someone else to talk to us about sort of the market opportunity out there as well. And then those are the topics that we then in the deep dive, sorry to take a long time to get to the answer to your question.
But right.
Then you get a chance to grab onto those topics and try to understand how can this be relevant to my business. Yeah.
Well, I've attended it many times. I even get to MC it upcoming time. So I'm a little tied into it there and I get to just listen in and hear the concepts. It's always, as you say, sort of thought leaders. It's always a really wonderful time just to sit back, think differently about your business or about how business works in general. And it's an exciting thing that happens in Juneau every year. It's a JEDC puts it on every year. And more information at jedc.org/innovation. And that's where you can sign up to participate and all that, I'm guessing as well.
That's right. That's right. And there's room. We're hosted out at the University of Alaska Southeast this year, a new venue. Centennial Hall wasn't available, but we're super happy to be out there. What an incredibly beautiful campus that is.
Place for learning.
And with Chancellor Carey retiring soon, this is a great opportunity to send her off as well.
Yeah. Brian Hulse, thanks so much from the Juneau Economic Development Council, the Innovation Summit. It's coming up March 15th and 16th. That's next Wednesday and Thursday. It's out at UAS and it's going to be a day and a half of pretty exciting thought leadership happening here in Juneau, and go with a purpose. And if you don't have a purpose, maybe you can figure out a purpose once you're there at the Innovation Summit. Brian, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks, Andy.
Appreciate it. I just love Daft Punk so much. I just want to just play this on and on. I could listen to this song all day. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein. And joining me now, Zach Pease from Underground Connection and Lauren Taylor, who's better known as Cora the Kid. Thanks to both of you for coming in. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for having us, Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here at Love Radio.
So. Yeah. Yo, that's great. Good, very good. So we're off to a great start. Love Radio. Terrific. Lauren, tell me a little bit about your background. Like, where are you up from?
Yeah. So I am from Washington. I grew up in Issaquah, which is about like 30 minutes outside of Seattle.
Yeah.
And started listening to music in middle school and making like mix CDs and things like that. And then moved up to Bellingham when I was 18 for college to go to Western. I actually almost went to University of Anchorage. It was
cool.
A last minute
cool.
or decision. But started throwing events up there and then moved down to Seattle. And I'm more in the behind the scenes marketing, event planning, and DJ side of things than the like production DJ side.
But tell me about the DJing. You say you went from doing mixtapes, which we've all done, to then you actually, so did you start with like just what kind of gear did you start with? And like, how did you build up on all the gear that ends up being required for to really be a performance DJ?
Yeah, totally. So I started mixing on a Mixtrack 1, which is like a $50 piece of equipment. It has like 3 knobs and turntables, and that's it. It's right. kind of like a children's toy almost, but it plugs into the computer. And I used that for like 4 years probably while I was learning. And then eventually when I started actually mixing on those like professional club standard pieces of equipment, which can run to like $15,000 pretty easy. That was like in the nightclub. So I just started playing a ton of opening sets and
using their equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. And then now you've gotten to where are you recording as well? I know you have some stuff. We're going to bring some stuff up on SoundCloud. Are you sort of recording, or is this more just recordings of live performances that you're doing, or how to, What's your kind of evolution there?
Yeah, totally. So one of the reasons that I kind of got an earlier start, which was when I was freshly 21, like the youngest you can play in the nightclubs unless you're already famous. I had to
Unless you're a Nepo baby.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
child star.
Yes, child star.
So I had a bunch of mixes that I recorded so I could send them to the booking teams and things like that, give them an example of what I would play. And now I'm lucky enough that I play so often in Seattle that the bookers tend to see me and I don't have to send them things. But now I'm entering this new stage of my DJ career where I'm looking outside of Seattle. So it's something I'm planning on starting back up again.
And just touring and stuff like, yeah, right. I think touring as a DJ is kind of cool because I know as someone who's tried to put on to promote tours and bring talent into Juno, it's great to bring in a DJ because it's one person. You know what I mean? It's one person and their gear. It's not like, you know, so it's like the scale of it can be, you know, sort of manageable for lots of different venues and lots of different events.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's instead of 5 meal tickets, you only get one.
And the meal tickets is not the problem. It's the airfare. That's the problem. Well, Zach, tell me about how you discovered Cora the Kid and wanted to make her part of this underground connection.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know when we met. We met somewhere in Bellingham. Doing something fun, probably.
Right.
And yeah, I've just.
She's just part of the scene that you
yeah,
knew.
The scene yeah, that I right, knew. Right. And, you know, every time I saw her play, it was just like, geez, here we
hook.
Go again.
Here we go.
It's yeah. off the chain.
I have a very specific memory of me playing All the Bodies Hit the Floor remix and Zach in the front literally just like guttural yelling, like, ah.
We all have party memories of Zach. <in Juno. laughs> I have amazing party memories
some
of Zach.
Some fonder than others, you know.
No, Zach's bringing a lot of energy, man. It's awesome. And so you're going to be playing, actually tonight, you're going to be playing out at UAS, and that's for 18 and over, right? That's the, is that what's going on?
Yes.
Yeah,
right.
Tonight at 7. It's 18 plus unless you have a parent or guardian with you. And that starts at 7 at UAS.
Yeah. Cool. And then Crystal Saloon tomorrow night. And that's the regular 21 and over. We all know.
21 plus.
That's a bar.
Yep.
That's a saloon. It's right in the title.
9 p.m. in the back room. And all of this is thanks to, you know, Downtown Disc and Alaska Airlines and the University of Alaska Southeast. And, of course, the Crystal Saloon.
You thank
know,
you.
Sponsoring us all to make it happen. So
well, Lauren, let's listen to a little bit of your music. And you wanted me to play this one called Deep in Bass. Is that right?
Yeah. So Deep in Bass is actually a club night in Seattle that I was a resident for. And so they had monthly shows and I would be typically on the support lineup. They had a mix series and I put that mix in called Emotional.
Do you have a term for, I mean, you know, what is there a term for what the genre you're doing that you
yeah.
you kind of fit into some specific scene that's happening?
Totally. So I actually consider myself to be kind of like a chameleon. That's what I call myself. So which is kind of a rarity, especially in Seattle, because people tend to really stick on their specific genres. And so I really mix all over in the underground electronic scene, like from drum and bass to techno to more dubstep, hip hop, everything like that. And so it kind of allows me to get a broader range of audiences and also has allowed me to get more shows because I'm not just playing in one specific
genre. It's cool to hear those terms you just said because I know all those terms. I know all that music.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean, I'm sure there's a new flavor to it that I'm not aware of and that's going on. But it's cool that there's not. Is there some new phenom that's happening? Some new thing that you're like, OK, this is the next thing coming down the pike?
Yes, there is. And it is like kind of it revolves around TikTok. And one thing that the previous generations have had a lot of is the separation of the queer music scene and the like straight music scene and TikTok because
the queer music scene has always been so influential.
Exactly.
Over what people think of as the straight music scene.
Totally.
I mean, for decades.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the genres are different because the genres that are being played at the straight music are what they were playing like 3 years ago
right.
at the queer shows.
Right.
But TikTok is allowing like all this entire generation to all be listening to the same type of music. So the queer and straight parties are kind of converging into one and they love hyper pop. They love like really distorted and like really genre, like moving from genre to genre quickly.
Hyper pop. How would you describe hyper pop?
It's loud and kind of cute. Like it's got like.
Is it based on pop music riffs? Kinda?
Yeah.
Is
so it's very, yeah. very alternative pop melodies with like crazy. Like if you were to, it's not easy listening. Let's
almost
just say
cartoony
that.
Voices or things like that happening.
Yeah.
Or,
and like yeah. really extreme changes in highs and lows. And like it's very fast. It's kind of an acquired taste. And.
Yeah. Frenetic.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. Right.
Or like if you took one way you might be able to think about it is like if you took an Ariana Grande song and played it plus 40 BPM.
That's music to create heart attacks.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's settle down and we'll listen to this. It's called Deep in Bass. And this is that what this one's called? Or tell me a little bit about this track again. I know you already did, but just intro this track for me.
Yeah. So this one's, it's called Emotional. It starts out with a Rupi Kaur poem. I'm totally saying her name wrong. But this was one of the first things I put out that was kind of mixing different genres and more on the emotional melodic side of things.
Okay, cool. This is let's see if it's here. Oh, hold on, it's gonna come up just a second here. Does that sound like it?
Yeah. Is this the beginning of it?
I think so. We're just playing this off of SoundCloud, so for those of you listening at home, we're just trying to figure out. You know, it's a new world, man.
Yeah,
I'm trying
totally.
To play this. Here we go.
I don't know if this is the one we were talking about, but okay. This is the style of music that I play. It was the last one on that list.
Yeah, it says here it's this one.
Well, it sounds like a mix of mine anyways.
All
I do
right.
play this liquid style of drum and bass a lot, especially when I first started out.
When you say liquid style of drum and bass, what is that?
Yeah, so if you listen to this, there's like a melody over the top of it. And
just kind of up and down a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, totally, because a lot of the other styles of drum and bass are, you keep using this term, but not as easy listening as this. There's like horns and things like that.
I would say, yeah, this is to me pretty chill, right?
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, I could hang out listening to this.
Totally.
Yeah, right. And this is the poem you're describing, or
no? So it's the poem was a Rupi Kaur.
Okay, yeah,
poem.
right.
if you go to that playlist, Deep in Bass, Emotional is the name of it.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm just not. We'll bring it up. We'll bring up another one here. Hold on one second. Well, we'll discover more there. But let's keep that's okay. You know, this is the SoundCloud phenomenon that we're in. You know, so we clicked on it and it just didn't quite want to play what we wanted it to play. But that's all right. But tell me a little bit more about kind of like you said you're just starting to explore outside of Seattle. What do you have other places you're going to start hitting, or do you have other plans going, or you just have stuff in development?
Yeah, totally. I was in Portland last weekend, and that was very fun. I travel probably the most to Portland. And then I'm hoping to play in Boise soon. But those are hidden in the Pacific Northwest, and we'll move outwards from there.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's great. And so and I'm just fascinated with the idea about, is there a Pacific Northwest scene that's happening in the DJ world, in electronica and in techno and in those areas, that's, you know, very different than if we were to go to Boston and go to a club?
Oh, yeah, totally. Specifically, there's kind of like a West Coast bass phenomenon, which is drum and bass music. But what really makes it different is it doesn't take itself very seriously. It's pretty goofy. There's a specific fashion that goes with it that's just basically the most random thing you can wear. And West Coast, from Vancouver, BC, all the way down to California, it's kind of got that same, just we're trying to have a good time type of energy.
That's cool. So do you think that carries over from like West Coast, California influence, or why do you think that is? It's fun to hear that. Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know what it is. I think over here we were segregated for a while as far as the music scene goes, because a lot of the underground electronic music goes through New York City and Europe. That's typically where it goes. So kind of creating our own similar music styles in a bubble made the culture around it kind of unique. There's some – the people in Europe typically kind of look down on the West Coast bass scene because they think we're too silly. They don't think we take it seriously enough.
Oh, interesting. Do you think that there's Asian influences on the West Coast electronic scene?
There could be. I'm not really sure, but you know, there's so many immigrants, especially in Vancouver specifically.
Yeah, right. I just wonder, you know, I would think there's more of a European influence happening in New York, for instance, you know, and on the East Coast, and maybe there's more of an Asian influence happening over here on the West Coast.
Yeah, totally. I'm not sure, but it's a good thought.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
I wish I knew.
Yeah, that stuff's all cool. That's what's cool about music. You know, that is what's really exciting and fun, can be one of the things that's really exciting about music, is figuring out those influences, figuring out how that kind of river flowed, you know, to get to what you're doing.
Oh my gosh, yeah. In the kind of the trend right now of underground electronic music is just every single genre converging into one like mega genre.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to be like, oh, this specific kick came from this style of music in Chicago, and it just everything comes into one.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Are there DJs that you're specifically are very much influenced by, or feel like, okay, this one really, I'm into that specific?
Totally. I would say probably the two most, one is The Librarian, who is out of Vancouver, BC, and she has a festival called Bass Coast, and it's just magnifique, perfect.
And it's in Vancouver?
It's in Merritt, Canada. Oh, okay. So a couple north.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's very talented event thrower, kind of the same I do. She produces music as well, but her festival is just hands down amazing. And then there's another artist named Boardlord, who's out of California, and she is also just an amazing DJ, and really can just like convince. I saw her just have this room go from dead, no one dancing, to literally the entire room just going insane.
It's really cool that it's women DJs that are so, you know, influential, and that's happening.
Of course.
Right.
It's an exciting time being a woman DJ, especially it's been so male dominated in the bass music scene for so long that I'm not the only woman on lineups anymore.
It must be amazing.
It's, I mean, you know, so exciting.
I mean, I'm sure that was the thing for a long time, right? And yeah, so it's just, that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Really cool. Yeah. Well, Zach, tell us more details about, or maybe repeat the details about how people can go see Cora the Kid. And where did that name come from, by the way, Cora the Kid?
Cora the Kid, it came from Legend of Korra, which is the Avatar The Last Airbender sequel.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So, yeah, Zach, go ahead.
So tonight at University of Alaska Southeast at 7 p.m., 18 plus, unless you have a parent or guardian. And then tomorrow night, Saturday, Crystal Saloon, 9 p.m. And that, I think, is a $15 cover. And it's in the back room. Downtown Disc will have a pop-up shop in the front. And Dr. Ake and Fancy Boy will be opening for Cora the Kid.
That's really awesome.
Yeah.
Well, so good to meet you. And thanks so much for coming up to Juno. It's exciting. And artists like you coming to town here is just one of the things that is just an exciting part of having people like Zach organize this kind of thing happening here. You know, we're just a little town, but it's so awesome to get great talent coming out of the Pacific Northwest coming up here. So thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. And if anyone sees me at the show, come say hi. I'll say hi back.
She will. She seems friendly, folks. She's not one of those intimidating DJs standing back being too cool. All right. Cora the Kid coming up. UAS, that's tonight at 7, and Crystal Saloon playing tomorrow. Thanks, Lauren. Appreciate it. Thanks, Zach.
Yeah, thank you. I have been winning the war. I'm losing the battle. I have been winning the war.
To your community-supported public media station, KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, and joining me now, we're going to switch it up. We're going to go from techno all the way back to Schubert to some beautiful music as part of a piano series. We have Andrew Brunel with us, a pianist, and John Hayes, who's the artistic director of the Juno Piano Series. Welcome to both of you.
Yeah, thanks, Andy, for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. And first and foremost, Andrew, let's talk about, this is a big day for you, and we're really excited to have you and feel privileged to have you on this day because you got an album drop happening today. It's really exciting. Your album Shades of Night is out today.
Yeah, that's right. It's also a big day because it's my first performance in Alaska. But
well, there you go. Okay,
let's talk about the album. Sure,
we'll go through this. Yeah. Not necessarily in priority order.
Sure.
We'll just talk about these big events. But yeah, that's really cool. So Shades of Night. Tell me a little bit about the process of that. What was there a concept around this album? And
yeah, well, it's a very eclectic program, which explores the theme of night, as you might guess from the title. And I wanted to include a lot of things that maybe more casual listeners of classical music would recognize and enjoy. So the first track is the first movement of Beethoven's Moonlight Sonata. Everyone knows that. The album finishes with Debussy's Clair de Lune, another track which everyone knows. But along the way, there's some less predictable stuff. You know, there's a movement by Bartok and Hindemith and the Samuel Barber Nocturne. But it's not all 20th century. There's, there are two Chopin nocturnes on the disc. There's some Brahms, some Schumann. And so I like to think of the less well-known things as tracks that people don't yet know they're going to love.
Well, we downloaded it on Spotify today. We have it here.
Oh, great.
is there a track you'd like to we could play a little bit of? And we'll start talking in a moment about the concert that's happening tonight and Schubert and the piano series. But it's just exciting to talk about this brand new music that's out for people to hear that you've done on this album. So I don't know. Is there one of them that you think – I mean, just – doesn't have to be. I could randomly pick one, but it would be fun.
Why don't you do that?
Okay.
Because I don't know what length of time you have.
Well, I might only just grab a minute of this, so we might have to interrupt it. But
that's cool. Maybe the Nocturne of Lowell Lieberman, who's a living American composer. This is his fifth nocturne in D major.
Okay, let me see. I'm just trying to find which track that is here. Hold on one second. That is Nocturne number 5 in D major. Is that the one?
That's
okay.
The one. Yeah.
All right. We're going to play that. This is brand new, just released today from Andrew Brownell. And it's his first recording for Divine Art. It's an album called Shades of Night. And this is a Lowell Lieberman composition. Can you tell me a little bit about why you chose to include this track and why this track was important for you?
I learned this piece when I was a grad student in Los Angeles, and I remember really being captivated by it. Lieberman wrote a work for piano called Gargoyles, which was really huge in the 90s. It seemed like everybody and their mother was playing it. And I really wanted to look at something else by him because that piece had just become a little bit cliche. I'm pleased to say it's disappeared a little bit from concert stages. But I went and I looked at that and learned it for some reason. I can't remember. I think it was a programming requirement for a competition or something I was entering. And so I played it and just tucked it away. And then when the time came to put together this album, it was a natural choice. It just sort of came back to me. And if you have the track list there in front of you, you see it's sandwiched in between two movements by Couperin, the French Baroque composer. And those are two basically The first one is called The Nightingale in Love, and it's also in D major. And then the second Couperin track is meant to be played immediately after it. It's a variation on The Nightingale in Love. And I just decided, you know what? I want to put this Lieberman Nocturne in between the two. And so the second Couperin track functions a bit like a reprise that you might find in a pop album, not necessarily something you're likely to find in a classical.
Wow, that's really fascinating. I'm so glad you chose that one and that there's that background story to why you chose it in that order. Well, that's really exciting. Thank you so much for that discussion of your album, Shades of Night. But let's talk now about the piano series.
Yeah, sure.
John, the Schubert. Let's talk about why Schubert? Why did we choose Schubert for this?
I mean, first of all, I know some people in town that have been asking me for years, like, will you play these sonatas? And I had not had them in my repertoire. So I was just like, whoa, that's a huge undertaking. Uh-huh. I think each sonata is basically 40 to 45 minutes of music. Why else to choose them? They are some of the last works written by Schubert. He was born in 1797, died in 1828.
I read a little bit about him before this. It's so sad.
So
died
31.
When he was 30. Yeah, 31 years old.
Potentially from syphilis. Maybe not directly from it, but apparently a part of the cure back then for
it
involved mercury.
Yeah. Yes.
So mercury poisoning was likely a contributing factor to his death.
Was there any reflection in his work? Because mercury poisoning, of course, also can lead to dementia type.
I am not sure about that specifically, but
I'm not aware of
that. No. Any. Okay. Yeah.
I think
he was still being prolific in the later stages of his life.
Very, very prolific.
Amazing.
One of the most prolific composers. I mean, he wrote over 600 songs, 9 symphonies, I believe, dozens of chamber works.
Incredible.
And just like,
yeah, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a conflict. I don't want to just always play into, oh, it's their last work. They're thinking about death. That's not always the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I recall he wrote a letter to someone saying, like, I have big plans for the symphony as a genre. Mm-hmm. You know, he was thinking about an entire lifetime of music. But at the same time, the several last years of his life, like, his health was very tenuous.
Yeah.
So I think he kind of knew, like, I could die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. It was weighing on him, at least at some point, some level.
I think... at a certain level that can be reflected within the compositions, mm-hmm. whether it's purposeful or not, or even if it's not intended by the composer, it's something that we certainly think about when we play the music often. So,
Andrew, what will you be playing? Your concert is tonight and it's happening at 7 p.m. And it's at, is it at the...
At the Jack.
At the Jack, yes, yep. Right next door at the Jack here. So what will you be doing tonight?
I will be playing the first of those last three sonatas, which is in C minor. And that is kind of the meat of the program, if you will. And then there are some side dishes around it. I'm starting with a slightly unusual piece from a Rameau opera that I arranged for the piano just a few months ago. And then some short pieces by Chopin and Scriabin, whom I've been told is the composer who has appeared the most on these piano recitals.
Somehow.
When you approach Schubert, what is it that you're trying to bring to that work? Is there something of Schubert's background, of what you know about him and what he was trying to convey that you're trying to bring to the piece and to the performance?
Wow, that's a big question. I would say with this specific sonata, because we could talk about generalizations all day probably, but with this specific sonata, I think any pianist who's going to approach the last three is confronted with their place in the repertoire. And as John said, the fact that they are the last three sonatas, and they're the longest, they're generally regarded as being very, very profound. There's a massive amount of gravitas attached to them, I guess. And so I think any pianist who's going to approach those last three sonatas has to contend with that, has to realize, particularly if they're requested by your regular audience members, that there are probably certain expectations that have to be met.
a little pressure.
in addition to whatever pressure a pianist would place upon themselves when approaching this. So I remember, if we could step back a little bit and look at the generalizations about playing Schubert, I remember being told back when I was in high school, actually, I played some Schubert for a master class, and somebody told me, you know, you must remember that all melodies in Schubert are about three things. They are about the love of the mother, the love of erotic love, and death. And so if you are told that at a young age, and you go in and look at Schubert with that kind of framing the experience, you can't help but be just a little bit leery of what you're stepping into.
you approach the piano cautiously.
Yes. With Freud at arm's length, I guess.
Well, John, I'll kind of throw the same type of question to you. Is there a mindset or something that you think about? And you're going to be will you be playing the very last?
I'm playing the second to last.
Okay.
At the last concert.
Okay.
That's just
the
way it worked out.
Yeah.
But I think for the sonata that I am playing, a lot of what Andrew said, for sure, like culturally within classical music, there's a lot of importance attached to it. But even trying to step away from all that and just encounter it as my own performer, I think the piece, all three of the sonatas really, but I think of mine as being exemplary of the sonata form. So if you're not steeped in music theory, I liken it to the essay, where you have this central question or thesis or idea, and you present it, and then you do different explorations about, like, well, what does it mean? How do we arrive here? So I open up very majestically, almost sort of like this fanfare. And then it very quickly like undercuts itself. And that's like the tension, the dramatic question. But the very final measures of the sonata, like 45 minutes later, are practically the same like fanfare opening for the closing. So it's this journey.
Introduction, conclusion.
And a lot of the material within those first like eight measures are used in various parts of the sonata. So it'll be like a little scale going upwards at the beginning, and then like the same kind of idea, but it'll be going down instead. Hmm. Or it has a little like leap going down, and then it has a leap going up in another movement. So you start to look for these little connections for like, he wrote this, but it isn't just this thing after this thing after this thing. Like there is some sort of like organic sense to the larger work.
So I really thank you so much for that explanation. I really appreciate that, because that really crystallizes for me what that whole term means, sonata. That was wonderful to hear that explanation.
It's the
thank you.
Corollary of writing in music form.
Yeah, so fascinating. And what you were describing there, would it be accurate to say that that could be considered like phrasing almost, the way that you're connecting these certain portions of it?
A little bit, yes.
Yeah. And then tell me just a little bit also about Sue Kazama is also going to be playing. She'll be playing March 19th.
17th.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. March 17th. I've got that wrong here, but March 17th. Okay. So tell me a little bit about that part.
Yeah. I mean, I believe she's been living in Juneau for 40 some years from Oregon originally, but she is one of the best pianists in town.
Yeah.
I think if you've done any amount of musicals or music in high schools or things like that, you will very likely have seen her as an accompanist. And she's done a lot of chamber music. I'm happy that, you know, I think she has had a little bit more time in recent years to focus on solo work. And she actually heard from the same friend that about playing the late Schubert sonatas.
Schubert sonatas.
It was a few years ago. She was like, okay, I could learn that.
And well, thank you so much to both of you for coming in. Andrew, again, congratulations on the album coming out today. And thank you for letting us hear a little bit of it. That was really exciting. Shades of Night is the name of the album and just arrived today and available for download on all the sites. And it's out of Divine Art Records also. So you can go to divineartrecords.com and find out more about that as well.
Absolutely.
And you'll be playing tonight at 7 p.m. at the Jack. It's the music of Schubert, the sonatas, the last three sonatas of Schubert being played over a series on tonight and then on the 17th and then on the 19th. And John, you'll be concluding it on the 19th.
Yes.
And thanks so much. Anything else that you want folks to know?
I think that about covers it.
All right. Thanks so much.
Come to the concerts.
Yes.